For the next hour, I'm very excited to introduce the author of the book, How to End the Autism Epidemic, Mr. J.B. Hanley. Mr. Hanley is a researcher and expert on the autism epidemic. He's been at the forefront of this incredibly important health issue for many years. How to End the Autism Epidemic is a book full of published science and quotes from the top autism doctors in the nation. The book was released last month on Amazon and sold out within the first day. Mr. Hanley is the co-founder and chairman of Generation Rescue, a nonprofit organization focused on helping children recover from autism that was inspired by the journey of his own son, Jameson, who was diagnosed with autism in 2004. He is also the co-producer of the documentary film Autism Yesterday and the co-founder of the Age of Autism blog. He's an honors graduate of Stanford University, lives in Portland, Oregon, with his wife, Lisa, and their three children. J.B. Hanley, welcome to Green Medicine.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being here, and I love talking to fellow members of the Northwest community. So you're just up the road from me.
Fantastic. Yeah. Should I just call you J.B.?
Yes, please.
Okay. And just a reminder for our listeners, our call-in numbers, please, if you'd like to ask JB any questions about autism at all, please call in at 206-421-5757 or 888-312-5757. I wanted to ask you, first of all, JB, how'd you become such an advocate for children and families dealing with autism?
You know, it was completely unexpected, and I think pretty much every advocate would say the same thing. I was a business person living in the San Francisco Bay Area, just trying to, you know, make money to raise two boys and a family. And my second son, we were following the CDC's recommended vaccination schedule, and it was after every vaccine appointment, my son got sicker and sicker and sicker. Mm. And so we went from being pretty blissful parents to being stressed out, scared, research-driven parents to try to figure out what was happening to our child. And, you know, we went through this for about the first year and a half of my son's life, these sort of stair-step declines after each vaccine appointment. And my wife and I began to wisen up, and we began to do our own research. You know, unfortunately, in that time period between 2002 to 2004, there wasn't anywhere near the amount of information about vaccine injury and the relationship between vaccines and autism that there is today. But there was enough, and there were parents online. They weren't on social media because it didn't exist, but they were in, Yahoo discussion groups. And we began to piece together the relationship between what was happening to our son and the vaccines. And then we began to realize that there were literally thousands that we knew of. There's more like hundreds of thousands, but there were thousands that we could connect with of parents who had the same exact experience that we were having. And I think that somewhere in that path, I went from being sort of a very anonymous private citizen, just trying to toil away at a job to a really angry dad. And, I just couldn't sit on the outrage, and my wife couldn't sit on the outrage, and it caused us to start Generation Rescue, which this is kind of an interesting thing that happens with people. When we founded Generation Rescue in 2005, the focus of the organization was almost exclusively on recovery from autism, which is a topic that you would be very familiar with. The naturopathic community has typically embraced the idea that a child with autism can recover. And so that's what we really spearheaded, was trying to put all the information about recovery in one place for people. And we felt like that would be our contribution to this movement. But you really can't talk about recovery without talking about causation. And as soon as you're talking about causation, you're talking about the V word, vaccines. And before you know it, you're embroiled in this nuclear hot battle that continues to go on in our society, amongst medical professionals, amongst parents, amongst media, everywhere. And we got caught up in that. And I guess that I've always had a simple code to live by. I want to do right by my son. I try to explain this to people. I already know the truth. I wrote a whole book about this topic. I'm very informed on exactly what's happening. My family is protected. Nothing more bad is going to happen to my family as far as vaccines go. I do this because I feel like it's the right thing to do, to share with other people. And I do this to honor the suffering that my son has gone through. It's a way to honestly stay a little sane with what's happened to him and the way that his life has been taken from him in the sense of the life he was meant to live. Mm-hmm. And that's the passion that drives me. I look at him and I imagine how grateful I would have been as a parent if somebody had shaken me up and woken me up before Jameson headed down the path that he headed down. And I think that is honestly, in many cases, the passion that drives advocacy. In my case, you know, I'm donating 100% of the proceeds from my book. I've never made a penny from anything to do with autism, and I never will. And I hang in this fight because I think it's the right thing to do, and I think that parents deserve to know the truth.
Yeah, I can't imagine the amount of resistance that you must have fought against this whole time for, 13 years now?
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest. I was a rugby player in college. I'm a competitive person. I went to Stanford. I don't throw that name around to try to brag, but I've never been self-conscious about being a smart person. Mm-hmm. I think the facts here are very obvious. I think the people trying to obscure the facts are motivated by money and greed. And I guess I see through the resistance. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said it didn't ever bother me, because you really get kind of arrows in your back from everywhere when you stand up and talk about this topic. But I'm an historian too. Like, this is how it always happens. You know, I try to explain this to people. When in the history of mankind has a product that people make a profit from, in this case, vaccines, started to cause problems in society to the point where a whole group of people were complaining about it, right? So tens of thousands of parents were all saying the same exact thing. When has it ever turned out that the profiteers were actually right and not the people complaining? So let's go through it, right? Lead in gasoline, lead in paint, mm-hmm. you know, glyphosate, Vioxx.
The list goes on and on.
You know, I mean, it literally goes on. There's thousands of things, DDT. I mean, I could literally keep going. Give me one example where that very large group didn't turn tobacco. When did that very large group turn out to be wrong? And the profiteers boldly mm-hmm. asserting safety were the ones who were right. It's never happened in the history of mankind. And I try to make the point in my book that there's a very clear playbook. It's called the tobacco playbook because they perfected it. They staved off the reckoning for the tobacco lung cancer relationship and all the liability associated with that for 40 years from the time the first science was published that clearly showed a connection. How did they do that? They conscripted, you know, people in positions of authority. They funded science that created doubt. They
conspired.
Manipulated the media and supported mm-hmm. them. And it was all very explicit. It's all been shown through discovery of litigation that that's exactly what they did. We're seeing the exact same thing happen here. And I guess because I understand that so clearly, when I meet resistance, I typically just kind of shrug my shoulders. I know how this movie's going to end. I'm just hoping to play some small role in accelerating the ending. And by ending, I mean the reckoning, where we acknowledge that we've actually poisoned now probably two generations of children, that vaccines are the primary driver of an epidemic of neurological disorders in our children, that 54% of our children have a chronic illness. You know, it's pretty amazing. You'll probably relate to this. My wife was recently at a 50th birthday party, and she went overnight with, you know, roughly 20 other women to celebrate somebody's birthday, right? She came back and she said, all but maybe one of these women, so 19 out of 20, had at least one child with some kind of learning disability. It's astonishing, the scale of destruction. And we've come to learn that aside from autism, which I clearly believe vaccines are the primary trigger of, autoimmunity is the next thing, right? It's asthma, it's the food allergies, it's diabetes, it's so many other things.
And the
science showing the clear relationship between a very recent bloated vaccination schedule and autoimmunity is also glaringly obvious to anybody willing to take the time. We all sit around, you know, I'm about to be 50 years old myself. There were not unhealthy children on the scale that we have today when I was a child, nowhere close. And it's such an obvious question. Where did all these sick children come from? And I think the answer is so blatantly obvious. I think the science so clearly supports that, that it's just a matter of time where the acknowledgement has to be made, because our children are so devastatingly sick across the board.
I do want to give our listeners the website for Generation Rescue, so if you could give us that one.
Yeah, so there's two that I would ask people to check out. So there's generationrescue.org. And
okay.
I think that's a wonderful resource for a parent with a child diagnosed with autism who is looking for resources for how to help recover that child.
Uh-huh.
And then I also maintain a blog. It's called JB Handley Blog. So it's jbhandleyblog.com, where you can see a wide range of my writings that are representative of the kind of writing that are in my book. And so people can check that out as well.
Fantastic. Okay. And I also wanted to mention, if our listeners have questions about vaccination policy here in Washington State, the website to go to is www.informedchoicewa.com. That's informedchoicewa.com. And the website has a wealth of information and research there. They're also planning a healthy immunity conference on March 2nd of 2019 in Linwood, Washington. So keep checking the website for updates on different speakers and information. Again, the website is...
I would mention that for parents who maybe aren't kind of in this community yet, if you have passion about kind of informed choice and keeping vaccines from being mandatory in the state of Washington... Informed Choice Washington is a group of parents. They're well known nationally because of their professionalism and their advocacy and their impact that they've had within your health department, within your state capitol. And I would just really encourage Washingtonians to consider meeting up and joining up with them and being a part of it, because it can actually make a massive difference. My own experience down here in Oregon has been that the average elected official in state government is well-meaning and typically ignorant when it comes to what's happened to the vaccine schedule over time. And I played a role in defeating a mandatory vaccination bill here in Oregon. And my learning from that was that when legislators are approached by everyday constituents who are informed, they listen and they typically do the right thing. And Informed Choice Washington is literally one of the models nationally for how to do that the right way. So I hope people consider getting involved.
Fantastic. So how would you advise parents who want to avoid vaccinations, but their school requires them to undergo a certain number and they won't let them go back to school unless they get vaccinated? What tools or what weapons do these parents have?
Well, so I'd say a couple of things. Firstly, I want to put some context around the word vaccination, because it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. People need to remember how crazy different the world is today from just a few decades ago. In the mid-1980s, there were 3 licensed vaccinations in the entire U.S., MMR, DTP, and polio. The national vaccination rate for those 3 vaccines was somewhere between 50 and 60%. I need people to think about that and let it sink in for a moment, because you are bludgeoned over the head with this idea that if we don't maintain vaccine-derived herd immunity, we're all going to die. And it's just a lie. It's just a lie. It's just not true. And the simple data that I just gave you, which is easily verifiable by anybody with 5 minutes on Google, children weren't dying in the streets in 1985. And so before we start panicking as parents, as we're wont to do because our pediatricians encourage this panic, just remember what was true in the mid-1980s. 3 licensed vaccinations and vaccination rates between 50 and 60%. And the world was fine. Okay, today we have 11 licensed vaccinations. And the vaccination rates in the United States all exceed 90%. Okay, so we need to remember that we're in a very different world. Okay, the next thing that people in Washington need to realize is that vaccination laws about attending school are made state by state. The state is actually in charge of those kinds of things, not federal. In the state of Washington, you guys have what are known as exemptions. Okay, and so somebody can file an exemption, religious or philosophical, and then they can go to school. So you can literally be a child who's never received a vaccine and attend K through 12 public school in the state of Washington. So that ability for a parent to ultimately have the choice of whether or not to vaccinate their child still exists in the state of Washington, as it does in 47 out of 50 states in the United States. Only 3 states make it mandatory for vaccinations to attend public school. Those are Mississippi, West Virginia, and very recently, California. So Washingtonians have a lot of discretion in medical freedom. Frankly, Informed Choice Washington has had a lot to do with ensuring that that freedom remains. So as of today, you're in decent shape. And what I encounter more often is parents who are really vexed over whether or not to vaccinate and then what to vaccinate for. And what I say to parents is, look, take your time. You don't need to be in a hurry. Baby's born. You're probably breastfeeding. They're protected. They're fine. Remember the mid-1980s. Don't need to give them all these shots. Go through each shot one by one. Treat it like the medical procedure that it is, because it is a medical procedure. Recognize that it has a risk and it has a benefit. Do the risk benefit for each vaccine, and then make the right choice for your family. And so I'll give you a great example and the easiest example. Hepatitis B vaccine. Hepatitis B vaccine is sometimes given on day one of life, always given at 2 months of age. It's not given in most first world countries unless the mother is hepatitis B positive. Hepatitis B has a very low level of transmissibility and typically requires the sharing of blood or having sex with someone, which means that a baby without a mother who has Hep B is at almost 0% risk for ever getting it. And the studies have emerged that show some extreme concerns about the risks of that vaccine. So I'm not a medical doctor, but I would say that I think that most rational, open-minded people, if they do the research on Hep B, they would be able to step back and say, I don't need that vaccine for my child. Now, that may not be true with every shot, but going through that exercise with each shot and owning the decision on the part of the parent rather than having the doctor cajole you into something is the way to go. And own it, treat it like the medical procedure it is, and as a family, you'll be way better off.
Great. We need to call out. Sorry to interrupt, but we need to go to a break real quick, and we'll continue that discussion. Hold that thought. Thanks.